You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. God, don't you feel safer now? The boogeyman is dead. It's all, we're gone. We're going to party like it's the early 2001. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a new Survey USA poll conducted yesterday finds that 60% of Americans say the United States is winning the war on terror. There's less terror in the world, compared to 18% who say the terrorists are winning. The identical question in August 2006 found that just 41% said the United States was winning, while 45% said the terrorists were winning. The poll found no real bump in President Obama's approval rating. I don't know what to make of that poll, other than I'm not sure the American public really... It's not so much that they don't care about the global war on terror. I think they're just realizing, like, hey, why are we spending trillions of dollars in Afghanistan and Iraq? Why are we doing this again? Oh, I know why. Wait a second. Now I know why.
Only God, no other king. Let the mighty eagle soar.
On the program today, we'll be welcoming Lee Papa, otherwise known as the Rude Pundit. He has a new book out, The Rude Pundit's Almanac. Gives you everything you need to know about the 2012 Republican presidential candidates. There's poems. He revisits New Orleans. Very funny book. I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll enjoy hearing from Lee Papa. We'll touch on bin Laden a little bit today. I'm sure many of you are fairly close up to speed. I was on Dylan Radigan's program yesterday. Had a couple of terrorism experts on. One guy, Anthony, I can't remember his last name, but it was encouraging to talk to this guy who basically said, it's time for us to get out of Afghanistan now. In fact, all of the experts seem to agree, if there was ever a time that we could have actually had a positive impact on that country after ridding them of the Taliban and rebuilding their country in some respect, that time is long gone. And it's unclear why we would stay there now. I guess the idea is that, well, we could build up the country and stabilize it so it doesn't become a safe haven for terrorists again. Meanwhile, there are safe haven for terrorists all around the world, and we're not going to rebuild Afghanistan. We can't afford to pay teachers in this country. We blew it. And Lord knows why we're in Iraq anymore. Got to keep that from becoming a safe haven for terrorists. Just absurd. And, of course, the right-wingers, they cannot deal with the fact that Obama, this Kenyan, Muslim-loving, anti-imperialist, Manchurian, non-American president, was responsible for giving the orders that ultimately ended up killing bin Laden. And I should say, I'm seeing mixed reports as to whether or not this was a kill mission or a kill or capture mission. I mean, it was fairly evident, I think, that bin Laden wasn't going to raise his hands and come out and allow himself to be captured. But at the very least, it's somewhat heartwarming to know that we are at least pretending that we would have captured this guy if given the opportunity and put him on trial. I mean, we can't seem to try anyone anyways, so I don't see what the point is. But that being said, what are you going to do? And meanwhile, I also want to get this out here at the top of the show, because I know many of you deal with right-wing coworkers or right-wing friends and family who all want to insist that, yes, our torture regime worked. Even Donald Rumsfeld says, yeah, we never tortured anybody who gave us the information that ultimately led to Obama. I mean, excuse me, Osama. That's going around now. I don't think it's possible now not to conflate those two words. But Rumsfeld even says torture did not lead us to bin Laden. Cheney, well, he assumes that we got that information from torture. And if Dick Cheney assumes it, of course he's trying to make an ass out of you and I. But the AP confirms, and Marcy Wheeler has a very good post up giving a timeline, that the information that we got that led us to the courier, that led us ultimately to bin Laden, was provided at least in part by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed months, if not years, after his waterboarding regime had ended. In fact, there are some people who argue that had the FBI and actual legitimate interrogators, rather than torturers who were trying desperately to find any connection with bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, and the notion that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, had that not been their agenda, to elicit false confessions to protect the political ass arses. I should say asses, because when Lee Papa comes on, it's going to be a shitstorm of, we're going to earn that explicit rating. If that had not been the agenda of the Bush administration, perhaps they would have been able to get bin Laden, aside from losing him at Tora Bora, back in 2003, 2004. I mean, it's clear to me anyways. And there are mixed reports, but Juan Cole points out that there are definitely reports coming out of Pakistan that, A, the Pakistanis helped us in getting bin Laden, and B, the Pakistanis prior to that were protecting bin Laden. So as I asked both the experts who would give me no answer on Radigan yesterday, does anybody have any speculation as to what we gave Pakistan? Now, it could have been something good like, hey, we're going to give you a free pass on the drones that kill your people. Or maybe it's, well, we'll give you some extra nuclear technology in your Cold War with India. Who knows? And it's also becoming apparent that if we stay in Afghanistan, we're doing so not because of Afghanistan. We're doing so because we're worried about Pakistan. But we've seen how preemptive and prohibitive and preemptive war has panned out for us. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Lee Papa later in the program. I'm going to revisit. Yesterday, Heather Herbert said that, no, bin Laden failed. He didn't succeed. But I'm not so convinced. And I have some reason to be not convinced. Bin Laden's only agenda was not to turn the world into a caliphate. It was to bankrupt this country the way that he feels he did the Soviet Union. And I think it's pretty hard not to argue that, at the very least, he's left us rather cash-strapped and morally bankrupt in many respects. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Lee Papa. This is the Majority Report. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is my pleasure to welcome to the program, I believe for the first time, certainly MR2 for the first time, someone whose work I've enjoyed for years at rudepundit.blogspot.com, Lee Papa, a College of Staten Island City University English professor, but you know him as Rude Pundit, and he has just come out with a new book, The Rude Pundit's Almanac. Welcome to the program, Lee.
Thanks, Sam. Good to be here.
Now, Lee, when did you come out? When did you become less anonymous?
Sometime around 2005, I did a show based on the blog at the New York Fringe Theater Festival. And just decided that anonymity and blogging was sort of getting in the way of trying to get a point out.
All right, fair enough. And you had a live show last night.
I did. It was a great turnout at a bar where we were slugging back whiskey, and I did a reading from the book at the Half King in Manhattan. And thanks to everyone for coming out.
Are you planning anything like that again soon?
Yeah, on May 31st, there's going to be another book event at Housing Works Bookstore in New York.
Great. All right. Well, so Lee, let's get into. First, tell me a little bit about the almanac. I know, you cover a potpourri of different things that are going on, things that will go on in the future in terms of the 2012 Republican race. Just give me a sense of the book.
Yeah, I think the book is geared towards trying to demonstrate how one becomes a liberal and how one stays a liberal, especially as the goalposts of the political spectrum shift further and further to the right. I used to think of myself as a mainstream liberal. Apparently now I'm just a wild-eyed radical. So the book is geared towards perhaps college students and everybody, just it's not just, hey, here's shitty things that conservatives do, and boy, aren't they assholes. It's also
though
about,
we should add, that's mostly accurate.
Yes, no, definitely, and the book is very clear about that. But it's also, hey, here's stuff that I've dealt with. Here's conservatives that I've met. There's about the time I shook hands with Ronald Reagan, and in the book and other various exploits throughout my life, as well as
you were a bit of a Reagan lover when you were in your early teens.
I was raised a conservative. I belonged to the College Republicans when I started college.
Sweet Lord!
And I
what
know.
Happened?
Then I found. I paid attention in class is first thing. I had a political theory class with this wonderful professor named Jean Danielson, who died last year. And she just, and I read Locke, Rousseau, Hobbes, and I just decided, wow, if you're going to be a conservative, to get back to what we said before, you have to be an asshole. And I don't want to be an asshole. I don't want to be. I was raised racist, homophobic. I was pro-capital punishment. You name it. I was let's nuke Iran back in the during the hostage crisis. That's how conservative I was. I was out there. And then there was just this moment where I remember I was on my way to a college Republicans meeting. I was with this guy who talked like Thurston Howell from Gilligan's Island, and he said, Lee, I can't believe that the Democrats want to cut funding for more bombs to nuclear missiles against the Soviets. We have to keep up with the Soviets. And I stopped and I said, no, I think we have enough nuclear weapons. In fact, I think we have too many. I can't go to this meeting. And I left. And that was, it was one of those like getting hit in the head with a croquet mallet moments.
Wow, that's fascinating. What happened with your family?
Well, my family, my very conservative father passed away. Well, that was before college. And my family has drifted. They stayed mainstream Republican, but Republicanism, again, that drifted away from them. And my brother, who used to be a Rush Limbaugh listening right winger, now can't stand it. He abandoned Bush when he and I took a ride through the wreckage of Hurricane Katrina, and the rest of my family ended up switching to Democrat.
Huh. Fascinating.
Since Democrats are now essentially 1970s, 1960s Republicans.
Right. That's true. It's sad, but it is true. And getting back to your book, I got to say, one of the things I think is what I really, really love is the way that you're graphing out the analysis of possible Republican presidential candidates. I love the way that you sort of track different different potential candidates, ranging from their dumbass, distressingly sinister, downright shameless, discomfitingly maniacal, delightfully weird. On some these guys, quite
what a strange batch of candidates, huh? You almost wish that one of them actually had a shot, just so that it would be interesting. But
don't you think that though that enables Obama in some respects?
Oh, I think so. I think that it has allowed him, first of all, to alienate much of his base, because much of his base is still in the next election going to go vote for him because there's no other choice.
Right.
And it should be strengthening him in a way that the left would like to see him strengthened. And I don't get why it hasn't.
Yeah, I guess that's a conversation for another day. But I guess I think he may not be that guy.
But was he ever? He never really presented himself as a leftist. He presented himself as a moderate. Maybe we read into it slightly left. Certainly, the positions he had in the campaign were left of where he is now.
Right.
But he said outright in the campaign, "I'm going to find and kill Osama bin Laden. I don't care if I have to go into Pakistan to do it." That's not generally what a liberal says.
I agree. But that to me is the least of his sins as president. But now that we I want to move to some of the stories in the past week. I mean, the bin Laden thing is pretty stunning. And I don't know what is most stunning of this. It's the maybe the right wing reaction or just the sort of I don't know. Personally, I just have this sort of empty feeling of like this guy has been our boogeyman for 10 years. He's killed and then nothing happens.
Right, right. And it points to that he's essentially like killing the mascot of a really bad baseball team is the way I sort of feel about it. Like there's so much out there that was supposedly hinged on catching Osama bin Laden, and now what? It's like if Superman finally defeated Lex Luthor, except Lex Luthor was already, hidden and in a wheelchair and couldn't actually create any plans anymore. It's a symbolic victory, and as much as we want it to mean, hey, we're getting out of Afghanistan, it's not. And so I don't get what the. I mean, I understand that the symbolic part of it, but I don't get what comes next.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what we're all basically waiting for at this stage. What happens next with and I don't know, maybe. Maybe tomorrow Obama comes out and says, "Hey, we're getting out of Afghanistan," and we'll write it off in that way. But
that's what he and to get back to, you know, what we were saying, his greater sins were. This gives him that opening. Why the fuck isn't he driving through that opening right now to say, "Yeah, I have a friend that's about to go over there for a second tour, and I don't want him to go." And I don't. And now, how can the soldiers think? Why are we here now? I mean, he wasn't even here in the first place.
Right.
You know, his hideout was in Pakistan. His hideout was in a better place than most everybody that follows him was living. How crushing that must be to the members of Al Qaeda. What are we up to? Down to a couple of hundred. Members of Al-Qaeda now?
In Afghanistan, anyways, yeah. I mean, sort of a drag. I've been living in a cave for the past 5 years, and I found out that Osama bin Laden's been living like Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. You know what? They should send out flyers and just drop it all over the areas of Afghanistan and Pakistan where there are Al-Qaeda members of Osama bin Laden's toilet and say, here's where he got to shit every day. Where's the hole that you get to shit in?
They should actually
welcome to your ideology.
They should actually just literally take a picture of one of Donald Trump's toilets and send that out. I mean, honestly, how would people know the difference?
Right, exactly. Here's his solid gold toilet. Now, Donald Trump, that's what we need to do. We need to tie Osama bin Laden and Donald Trump together.
Well, I'll tell you, speaking of Donald Trump, there's a poll that came out today. I guess Daily Kos commissioned it by the public policy polling outfit. And the number is actually impressive. The number of people who think that Barack Obama was born in the United States has grown by 12 points after he released his long form. Republicans still a majority. I should say now it's actually down to below a plurality. You still have 32% of Republicans, whereas you had 47%. Believed that he was not an American citizen. You've actually got like a 15-point swing there. That's pretty impressive.
Well, it's nice to know that occasionally facts matter.
One has to wonder how they're gonna what they're gonna run on though in 2012.
Oh, I said last night that for Barack Obama to lose, he'd have to be caught in bed with a dead white boy somewhere in the Lincoln bedroom. And even then, that it's still up for doubt whether or not there's anybody out there who could defeat them. There was I think it was Brad Blog that tweeted, I'm thinking of running for the Republican nomination for president. I think I'd have a pretty good shot now.
Well, I mean, do you think this bin Laden thing is going to make that much of a difference?
If nothing else, it certainly takes away one of the major arguments that the Republicans have had against Obama. You know, Americans don't do nuance well, and the Republican candidates have been hammering Obama on foreign policy credentials since 2008. And one of the things that Republicans have done is to sort of leave Americans with a sense that there's a black and white way of looking at things when it comes to any issue. Well, I killed bin Laden trumps anything that they can throw at him.
Right.
And so in some ways the way the Republicans have framed the whole debate now works against them. Oh yes, Rick Santorum, you made your little foreign policy speech the other day. Obama killed bin Laden.
End of story.
You know, top that. And we on the left know that there's so many other issues out there, but for the vast majority, for those idiot, independents that have gotten this mythical status when they're just people that can't commit, what are they going to listen to? They're going to listen to, oh, but Obama killed bin Laden. I talked to college students yesterday who 2 days ago would have said they hate Obama, Obama's destroying the country. Yesterday they were saying Obama's great, Obama's, you know, the, this wonderful man now because he has blood on his hands, and he has blood on his hands that they wanted to see on his hands, and now he's the warrior king.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, because actually, you know, that's the one sort of factor. I mean, for personally, I don't think this is going to make that much of a difference in the election, simply because I think the economy is going to override it. But for kids who are kids, I mean, for people, for people who are 18 years old, for people who are 24 years old, they have grown up. They're almost their entire sort of sentient life. It has been, or, you know, to the extent that they are aware of anything that's happening publicly, Osama bin Laden has been this sort of boogeyman that I think, you know, people in my generation, maybe your generation, I think you're a little bit younger than I am, we didn't grow up with anybody like that. I mean, the Soviet Union, yeah, but it was not personified in one person. You know, we didn't have like a Khrushchev, I guess. And you obviously deal with college kids on a daily basis. Does bin Laden mean something to them that it doesn't mean to the rest of us?
The flip side of it is that a lot of them were also, the college students I deal with were 8 or 9 years old when 9/11 happened. So they have this sort of gut level reaction. Like, I remember being in third or fourth grade and having to, you know, my parents pick me up at school. I think that they understand that something significant has happened, but I think that in some ways, I mean, I'm not sure if this is what you were thinking, but that there is something about having this boogeyman there for, that maybe for people in their 20s was more, late 20s is more significant than people who are now just going to be able to vote. Because they're numb. They're numb. All of their news is filtered through their iPhones, and there's no depth to what they believe. And that sounds cruel, I guess, for a professor to say. But
I hope none of them are listening.
Yeah, well, but this is, you know, and if any of them are listening, you know, read a fucking book every now and then.
Yes, let's hope that they do. All right, well, listen, Lee Papa, they should probably start with your book, right? I mean, what do you do? Do you hand it out to your students? I mean, you're an English
professor. No. Sadly, I'm one of those ethical professors who doesn't, like, assign my book to the students. So,
I got a tip. If any of your students are listening right now, let me give you a tip. You read your professor's book. It'll go a long way in getting a grade. You read the book, you go up and just say, "Professor, I gotta say, my whole family enjoys it, and I just want you to know that it's really, it's been a great experience reading your book." I mean, what are the chances?
Sam, you just got an A.
No kidding. That's exactly how I got through with, B's. That's how I got my B's. The book is The Rude Pundit's Almanac. The author is Lee Papa. You can go to rudepundit.blogspot.com for more information. Do you have a book site as well?
You can go to orbooks.com.
Orbooks.com. And we'll put
and,
a link up. Go ahead.
And Amazon.
And Amazon. We'll put a link up on the majority.fm site, which will take you directly to Amazon so that you can purchase the book. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. Lee Papa, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Sam.
All right. We'll be right back. All right, folks, we are back. If you're watching on the Sammy Cam, we're having sound problems again. Not sure why. We will deal with it. We will figure this out. Getting back to Osama bin Laden, Ezra Klein has a piece up. Bin Laden didn't win, but he was enormously successful. And frankly, I mean, my understanding of his goals, and I am no expert on bin Laden, but my understanding of his goals was that in part, what he was trying to do was to draw the United States into the Middle East. His larger goal, yes, was to use the United States' involvement in the Middle East as a catalyst to bring about a caliphate. That didn't happen. Though I think if you listen to our conservative friends, they believe that there is a real chance that is happening in this country right now as we speak. Of course, Sharia law, just completely, we're so overrun with Sharia law. I can't even begin to tell you. But Ezra Klein did a piece where he spoke to David Gartenstein Ross, a counterterrorism expert who specializes in Al-Qaeda. And he reiterates something that I had talked to Heather Hulbert and mentioned on Dylan Radigan yesterday, which was what he wanted to do was bankrupt the United States like he did, felt he did, the Soviet Union by dragging them into a protracted war far from their country, Soviet Union less so, but with extended lines of resupply, and basically get them stuck in a quagmire. And now, 10 years later, we are still in Afghanistan. 10 years later, we are still in Iraq. I guess 7 years later, 8 years later. And despite the fact that Mission Accomplished was announced 8 years ago, almost to the day, we're still there. Klein writes that the campaign, speaking of, and I should repeat this for younger listeners, but bin Laden was part of the Mujahideen that received CIA funding. Late in the Carter administration, they provided some nominal funds, and then Reagan upped it to about $1 billion a year, got the Saudis to chip in more money to basically create a privately funded army, as was his wont. He liked to do this in different parts of the world to skirt around any type of restrictions that Congress might put upon him. To fund the Mujahideen, to essentially Afghani freedom fighters, if you will. Once they won, however, we did not help in any way to rebuild Afghanistan. We left a vacuum there. The Taliban came in. The Taliban, of course, were educated, many of them, in Pakistan. They were created by the Pakistani version of the CIA, the ISI, to primarily fight India in the Kashmir region, which is a region over which India and Pakistan have a disputed contention of ownership. So for bin Laden, in October 2004, he said that just as the Arab fighters and Afghani Mujahideen had destroyed Russia economically, Al-Qaeda was now doing the same to the United States, continuing this policy in bleeding America to the point of bankruptcy. That was at least one of his goals. So for bin Laden knew that he could not win an existential war with the United States. But he could seriously, seriously constrict its sphere of influence by bankrupting the country. And I think it's rather hard now to argue that bin Laden didn't achieve a certain measure of success. I mean, I don't think we're bankrupt, but we are bankrupt enough, or we are in economic dire straits enough that we now have the elite in Washington talking about cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare, bringing in austerity programs. The number that's bandied around about the cost of these two wars is $1 trillion, but Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, estimates the price tag on the Iraq war alone will surpass $3 trillion. Because you've got to include the VA expenses. You've got to include the productivity expenses for returning military personnel. You've got to include the inflated military budgets. Afghanistan likely amounts to another trillion or two. And in the buildup in Homeland Security since 9/11, another trillion. Klein mentions the indirect cost. The Federal Reserve worried about fear-induced recession / interest rates after the attack on the World Trade Center and then kept them low to combat skyrocketing oil prices, a byproduct of the war in Iraq. I think they also kept them low because they wanted to feed the economy. I mean, create a debt-driven economy. That decade of loose monetary policy may well have contributed to the credit bubble that crashed the economy in 07 and 08. Of course it did. And then I would go further than Klein and talk about the implications of bin Laden on our moral authority. We are a torture regime. We have extrajudicial prisons. We have black ops sites. We have Guantanamo Bay. The story out of the Baltimore Sun, a federal judge ruled Wednesday that a group of Muslim activists and organizations cannot review additional records of FBI inquiries, read spying into their activities, but at the same time berated the government for misleading the court about the existence of these files. So we've got a spy apparatus that has run amok where we can spy on our own citizens in this country, where these agencies feel emboldened enough to lie to courts. We have, just last week, the U.S. government taking reporters on a tour of the new military detention facility in Kansas, the place where Bradley Manning will be housed. Do you think that Bradley Manning would have been subjected and allowed to be subjected to this kind of torturous incarceration even before he's convicted, were it not for 9/11? And I should say, and Klein makes this point, that these are all choices that our country made. We didn't have to go down this path, but we did. And maybe bin Laden saw something about our society that we weren't aware of. The list goes on and on and on, doesn't it? It's not just a question of getting pat down at getting on an airline. We have seriously degraded our moral authority and our own judicial system, our constitution in this country. And so it's very hard to say that this guy failed. He was living, granted, without TV and internet. That may be difficult. No, I guess he had TV. No phone and internet. In a mansion-like compound. Meanwhile, watching the United States destroy itself from within. Speaking of debt, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said on Monday that he'll begin to undertake emergency measures this week to avert a potential default on the federal debt. At the same time, he said the United States now has until August 2nd to raise the legal limit on federal borrowing, 25 days longer than he had estimated last night. The reprieve is largely the result of higher tax revenues than anticipated. How can that be? How can it be that tax revenues in any way allow us to pay off debt or do anything? I thought revenues had nothing to do with anything. I thought it was all, our whole budget was just spending. We have no revenue component, to hear it told. And meanwhile, for those of you who, like David Stockman, and we'll get to him in a moment, he has this doomsday scenario of now that PIMCO is shorting our treasury bonds and quantitative easing is ending by the Fed. They're not going to be buying up as many treasury bonds, that everything's going to fall apart. I asked him then, where is anybody going to go? Apparently, the yuan is creating some havoc for the Chinese. Howard Schneider in the Washington Post. Washington's concerned that China undervalues its currency to bolster trade is now also becoming China's problem. Inflation is bubbling and consumer unhappiness is rising as the prices of imports chugs higher as measured in China's currency. At the same time, international investors are wary of the yuan because the government's close management of the currency. China's got their own problems, folks. People are not going to flock to the yuan. And for any conservative who tells you that they will, you've got to ask them, well, wait a second. You mean the market prefers a communist regime? You mean the market prefers a tightly regulated and managed currency? Like only communist China could provide? Leading members of Congress have charged that China's currency policy directly siphons away American jobs. And last fall, the House approved legislation that would tax Chinese imports to offset any edge provided by the low value of the currency. By setting a low exchange rate rather than letting market forces set yuan's value like that of other major currencies, China is inviting higher inflation because imported fuel and food are artificially expensive. Government said fuel prices have increased twice this year, prompting a trucker strike in Shanghai last month. Food prices are also rising, particularly sensitive in a country where per capita income is just $3,000 a year and tens of millions remain in poverty. Overall inflation at 5.4% is well beyond the government target. We could use something a little closer to the 5.4 than we're experiencing now, I can tell you that. The managed exchange rate is also limiting the international use of the yuan, frustrating Beijing's commercial and political aspirations. Moreover, the currency policy is resulting in a surplus of foreign exchange holdings, much of which is locked away in low yield and some Chinese argue risky U.S. Treasury securities instead of helping develop the country. So there you have it, folks. And just a quick update on Canada's election. It appears the Conservative Party will again, sadly, govern Canada, this time with a majority. The New Democratic Party, a movement with socialist roots, will form the official opposition. The Conservative Party acquired 165 seats in Parliament. The New Democratic Party won 105 seats, well above its previous record of 45. The Liberals held only 35. And they had one vote. One member of the Green Party will be in their parliament. All right, folks. You can call me at 646-257-3920. Or you can IM me at Majority FM or any other IM that I have been known to use. We'll be right back after this. Oh, and folks, I should tell you, please, please become a member if you can become a member. We need more members. I don't know how else to put that. We need more members. And as always, if you can use the Amazon link that you will find on the front page of Majority.fm, you can redistribute wealth from that corporate behemoth to this fledgling behemoth. And as always, don't forget to go to justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off your coffee. A great deal, a great company, Fair Trade Coffee. Delicious. They also have chocolate and tea. Join us in the post show, if you will.